Hey there, you're listening to Frequency Conversations, the podcast about the kingdom of God invading every space in every way. We've got another episode with Liam Parker of Flow Church. We had him on a couple of episodes ago with Julian. They sat down for a conversation, but this time he's sitting down with Katya. It was recorded on Instagram Live, but we thought it was too good not to share on our podcast here. It's a fun episode. Katya brings up some topics around judgment and compassion. They talk about social media and our role as Christians on social media, how we're supposed to respond to that. They talk about the future of the church, and they have some fun things to talk about around faith. It's really fun. I enjoyed listening to this one. I hope you will too.
Hello.
Oh, yay. Hello. How are you?
I'm good, Katya. How are you?
I am good, thank you. It is good to see you, even if it is through a screen.
Yes, it has been a very long time since I actually saw you.
It has.
But we've known each other for quite a while now.
Yeah, I'd say, what is it? Must be about, we must have met over 10 years ago,
Something like that, because we did leadership training together with New Frontiers, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We did. Yeah. And that was a great, great time. I loved that training. I had fun, got to meet some crazy wild people such as yourself. It was great.
Yes. Thanks, man. And we sat next to each other, if I remember rightly.
We did. Yes. And if I remember rightly, we were also a little bit controversial occasionally.
I think that's why we sat next to each other, Katya. I think we noticed something in each other that said, I think this person wants to ask the big questions. But yes, we were a little bit more controversial. Mm-hmm. And I actually didn't finish that leadership training. Because we were having a move with our young people and it was just taking too much of my time.
Yeah, so, I remember.
Yes, but Katya, you are a very smart, very, I always found you incredibly gifted when I met you, because you're actually a doctor as well, aren't you?
That's true. Yeah, I'm a medical doctor. I haven't practiced medicine in a while now, so it feels like a slightly different life. But I am a medical doctor, did emergency medicine for about 4 years, and then transitioned fully into vocational ministry here.
Yes. And then now you're living in Boston with Julian and your two kids, about to plant a church in Boston. But you've been in South Africa, you've been in America, you've been in England.
Yes.
You've kind of lived in multiple places.
Yes, I have lived on 4 different continents in my life. So wow. I was born in Iran. I grew up in England. We lived in South Africa. That's where both of our kids were born. And now we are proud residents of the United States.
Wow, man. And so and if I remember rightly, your parents are also awesome people because they run a charity, right, for persecuted Christians.
That's right. So they do ministry in the Middle East, underground church planting, planting churches amongst Iranian refugees. They're incredible. They are absolutely amazing.
No, I remember seeing them when they used to come to Kerith to do the training.
Yes.
And thinking these are some real deal people. And Katya, you are the same. I love the fact that you know, one major profession isn't enough. Let's just do two, you know, be a doctor and a pastor. For me, being a pastor is like all of my capacity, but you somehow managed to fit in being a doctor and a mum and writing a book. You've just written a book. Do you want to tell everyone about that?
That's true. Yeah. So I've written a book called Equal. And it's almost its 1 year anniversary, which is very exciting. And really I wanted to write a book about the conversation on gender roles in the church, male, female equality, who's in charge, who should be in charge, who has God given authority to in the church, all of that. And, you know, this is a topic, obviously, being a woman in ministry, a pretty big topic for me personally.
Yeah.
And I've read lots and lots of the material out there, some great, some more challenging. And I was really aware for myself that I wanted to read a book on the topic that was full of heart, so that it was readable, full of great scriptural grounding, so that it would be believable, and that it would cover all aspects of the debate, so that I wouldn't read it and think, now I need to read another five books to, you know,
which
cover
is part
it.
Of the problem. Yeah.
Exactly. But that it would be something that really would be a one-stop shop, that you would come, you would read it, it wouldn't be a reference work, but that, that so many scholars would be referenced, so that it would be something that this isn't someone who just made this up or really wants to believe it, but actually there's really good biblical reasoning in this book. I didn't find that book. And in the end, I ended up trying to write it because I was like, this, something like this needs to be out there. And honestly, I mean, it's a long God journey of me writing it. Initially, I didn't want to write it. But anyway, I'm glad it's out there now.
Well, I mean, I don't blame you because, I mean, I've known you for a while and I know that you've had some backlash from the book. And even just you as, and to be fair, I actually remember in leadership training, you would get some comments and some things said to you, which is why maybe, I don't know, why I felt like I wanted to befriend you somewhat, but yeah, I mean,
you,
I just, you have been one of those people that I know that have been targeted in many ways, but I think it's because God wanted to use you. And my wife is actually reading the book right now.
Oh yay, I hope she's enjoying it.
She is loving it, and she says actually it's really intellectual. She's really, she has to read like a few pages at a time to really take it in, but I guess
it is dense.
That's the doctor and the smarts of you coming out. But Cathy, so I'm so excited to have you on. We had Julian on a couple of weeks ago, and yeah, we're really thankful for you guys. So can you just tell us what you're doing right now? So you're in Boston and you're actually taking the lead on the church plant as well, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. So
just talk about that for us a little bit.
Sure. So we moved to Boston about 7 weeks ago now, I think it is.
Okay.
Planting a church, it's called The Table Boston. If you want to check it out, friends of ours and our team made a great website, thetableboston.com. Cool. And a little plug for it there.
Go for it. Plug as much as you like.
But it's been an amazing journey getting to this point. We have had so many people say to us, are you sure this is the right time? Like in the middle of a global pandemic, with all the racial conflict, riots, protests going on, and a lot of that hit Boston very significantly. We actually moved 2 days before the riots started. But so we've had lots of questions. Are you sure this is the timing of God? And you know, the funny thing is, as unusual as it seems, I've never felt more on time for anything else before.
Great.
Like this is one of those moments where we got here and we were like, God has set us up for this very moment. We're not late, we're not early, this is the right time. And God has shown us extraordinary favor. We have now got a team of about, well, I can tell you exactly as of today, it's 24 adults and 5 children, which is amazing because we haven't really done anything yet.
Yes.
But God has been gathering to us in a season where it was impossible for us to do that gathering. But isn't it so like God that when we kind of have to step back, he's like, okay, now let watch me. I can do this really well. So we're kind of in the process now. We're starting to have little home group type meetings, obviously wanting to honor the rules of government here. Yeah, we want to honor that. We want to do something. I really believe that our manner as Christians is called to be honoring, even when our message might not feel exactly what people want to hear. And I think sometimes Christians can be drawn into misunderstanding and thinking they're doing something right if their manner is offensive.
Yes.
When I read the Bible, I actually see consistently Jesus and the believers, you know, you look in Acts, Paul was actually incredibly careful to preach an offensive message while his manner was as honoring as possible.
Great.
And I think we get that switched around. So we're trying to follow the guidelines so that we would be people who in our manner are honoring the rule of the land here, whilst not shying away from the kingdom message and knowing that God hasn't stopped, you know, Corona has not got God on a back foot.
No,
and so we're feeling excited about planting this season. So yeah, it's small groups at the moment, lots of stuff on Zoom, all the same as every other church at the moment, but finding incredible favor and acceleration and growth. Every week, I'm getting messages and calls from different people all across the states who are saying, we've heard about you, we've been following you, can we come and join your team? So it's God.
I mean, that's
it's amazing.
Cool, isn't it? That's
yeah, it
cool.
is.
I remember when we first started and then people started turning up and you're like, oh, people actually want to come. Like, this is so exciting.
Totally. This is really
and
happening.
And then you meet someone that's like actually a really cool person. You're like, wow, I can't believe you actually want to join our church.
Totally.
Yeah, you touched on a few subjects there. let me just dive into them before I want to ask you about what you think for Church of the Future.
Sure.
But, you know, your thing about, yeah, we want the gospel to offend, not our manner.
Yeah.
And you guys posted something recently about that, which me and Emily talked through. And I think that's really true. Like, I'm very aware when I used to evangelize on the street, there were times when I offended somebody, not the gospel. And yeah. What was funny is I would go home and I'd say to myself, oh, they just don't like the gospel. And as I sat with it for a while, I was actually, no, maybe they just don't like me. Maybe the way I came across, the way I did it actually wasn't the best. And so I think you're really onto something there.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Jesus says, blessed are you when you're persecuted for my sake.
Yes.
It's not a blessing when you're persecuted because you're obnoxious. Like, those are two different things.
Come on, man.
And I really, you know, there's so much stuff going on social media at the moment. We've all got to be careful in how we're navigating things. And we want to be gracious and non-judgmental to our brothers and sisters, as well as to the rest of the world, right? So this isn't a comment of judgment, but rather a question being raised of, are we sure we're being persecuted for the right reason?
Yes.
Because if we're being persecuted for the gospel, 100%, I'm not backing down from that. I'm not ashamed of the gospel by any means. But if there's something about my manner that is drawing undue attention and is actually being a stumbling block so people cannot hear the glorious gospel proclaimed, then there's a problem with how I'm proclaiming the message.
Yeah.
And it's got nothing to do with the gospel. And so our message is too precious. What we carry is too precious for us to create hurdles for people not to ever be able to receive the message, not because of the message itself, but because we weren't careful enough to speak in a way that would reach hearts. And so I'm just aware of that. Like, this has got nothing to do with anyone else. For us, we're aware of that every time we're planning around what will the table look like, you know, how many people will we be able to have in a room? I'm so aware that we want to walk carefully so that the message will spread far and wide, rather than getting a reputation of people who just don't care enough to follow any rules.
Yes.
So,
I think you're really on site there. And you're right, there is a lot of stuff just thrown out on social media these days. And you're just like, where has that come from? Why are you saying this? And, you know, we can always just say, well, God told me. So it's an interesting one. And then just one more thing, because you said in there, you've never felt more on time. Could you try and explain, if you can, what does that feel like? You know, if someone's watching today, you know, they're a mom, they're in school, they're looking to go to uni, whatever. How would you explain that feeling of going, you know what, I feel on time? Because I think that's something that we all really fret about. Am I doing exactly what God wanted me to do at the right moment? How does that feel? Can you explain that? Or is that too crazy a question?
It's such a good question. I'm not sure if I'll be able to explain it particularly well.
Just go for it. We'll see what happens.
I think first thing I want to say as a caveat to what I'm about to say.
Go for it.
I think when we make decisions that are rooted in faith, it's virtually impossible not to be on time. And
nice.
I say that because faith pleases God and he's so attracted to faith decisions. And, you know, one of my favorite verses is in the epistles where Paul writes to the people and he says, I pray that God will fulfill your decisions of faith and your intentions for good by his great power. And I love that because the prayer isn't, oh, you heard God right and now he's going to fulfill it. No, I pray that even your good intentions, they may have missed the mark entirely, but what I'm going to pray is that your good intentions are fulfilled by his power. And it's because God is magnetically attracted to faith. So I want to put that as a caveat to what I'm just about to say.
Because that's great, man.
If you're fretting about, am I right in this? Have I missed the mark? Is this the right call? Did I make the right call on uni or my job decision? Or should I be at home with the kids? My one overarching question to all of those things is, did you make the decision out of faith? Did you make it in faith that God is good, that God is with you, that there was a stirring in your spirit, that this was pursuing the call of God? If you made it in faith, it's virtually impossible to have gone wrong. Because if we're following his voice and following his presence, he'll meet with us. He'll step in if we've gone wrong. So that said, in this moment, and I really do believe that it was almost like an extraordinary spirit confirmation in our hearts, partly because I think what we're doing is requiring courage that is potentially outside of the day-to-day that we would need. And so it felt almost like when we got here, it was this deep settling in my heart. You know when you go, you have your first day of school, and you've got the butterflies, you've got the nerves, you're like, what's it going to be? The anticipation before it. And then you get there and you meet a couple of friends, and suddenly you feel ease, and
feel
all of that nerve, like it's just gone, that nervous energy. It felt like that the minute we landed. It was like a sudden deep sense of this is right. And that's what it felt like.
Wow. No, I love that, man. I love it. And I love what you guys are doing. I love the fact you're planting church in the middle of the pandemic. And actually, I'm chatting to another friend who's in Philadelphia, actually. So not too far away from you. And he's planting in the pandemic as well. So he's had to rethink his strategy. So let's go into that. So what are you focused on then right now? Because if you can't focus on a physical gathering, what's your focus as a leadership? Like, where are you trying to, what's the first point of call priority for you?
So I think it's a few different approaches.
Okay.
One, the group of 20, 30 that we have, though we might not be able to all physically gather in one space, and we're looking around the rules of that, I think at the moment under 10 you can gather, so we'll probably do little pockets instead. But community can be built in lots of different ways. And so we're keeping in touch, we're praying together, we're doing lots of Zoom calls where we pray together, and where we just kind of get to seek God together. And we've got to be so grateful to God that we're living in a generation where things like Zoom are available, where this is a completely different moment for the church than any other time of history. And we've got to be able to take advantage of that and be grateful for it. The reality is, church planting for me is all about bringing the kingdom to a city. And we don't have to have physical meetings to be able to do that. So even focusing on a lot of my day is spent walking around the city at the moment. Most of our community haven't arrived yet. They're moving in the next few weeks. And as I'm walking and praying, masks are really helpful for this, because when you put masks on, no one can see your mouth moving. So I'm like speaking in tongues under my breath, and no one thinks I'm crazy, which is amazing. But I do that a lot, and it's almost like I can feel a tangible shift in the spiritual atmosphere. I was saying to Julian this morning, where I go and pray, there's a park that close by that I go and pray in almost every morning. And there's a gentleman who does some kind of, it's meditation. He's doing lots of different things. Sure. And the spiritual atmosphere in that place is very interesting. And I've noticed as I regularly go and sit there and I'm just speaking in tongues, headphones in, worship music on, I'm literally feeling like a tangible, it's almost like a cog in the wheel. I can feel the creaking of it shifting.
Wow.
And it's quite a powerful experience to have. And it's making me very aware that each of us, every Christian, is given the right of authority everywhere we go. And I'm sensing the reality of correct authority being proclaimed even as I speak in tongues in places and spaces where strongholds have been allowed to flourish for far too long. And so part of our church planting strategy at the moment is to fill the streets with the sound of a different authority. Because I'm very aware, even with how our team has been gathered, that there's lots of the practicalities of gathering people. We're befriending people, we're inviting people, all of those things will happen. But so much of it is a spiritual dynamic where God can take care of the practicalities. But what he's inviting us to do is to partner with him and understanding our authority and shifting the atmosphere of a place. Wow. And that is a huge part of our church planting strategy for now. I feel like we've been given the privilege of time to do that.
Yes.
Where I get hours where I can pray and none of that is wasted. This is sowing something so powerful. And, you know, when we read stories of revivals of old, they haven't happened off the back of a great 10-point strategy and the right meetings with the right people. Exactly.
Yeah.
They've happened through prayers and partnering in authority with what Jesus has called us to do. So I'm feeling very excited with this perhaps unusual church planting strategy. We're super excited by it.
No, I love that. I love the fact that it's so accessible. It's so easy. It's simple. It's let's just get out there and do it. And I think you're right. I think there is this, I think we forget as believers the power we have just to walk the streets and pray and see things change. You know, I was chatting to a friend of mine in Estonia, and there was a beer festival in Estonia that she didn't like because it caused so much drama that night. So she started walking up and down praying for it when it wasn't there, like the field that they met on. And then within a few months, the thing was cancelled.
Come on.
Like completely said, we don't want to do this as a nation. When she was like, she couldn't even believe it. Like she thought, she was like, God actually answered my prayer on this, this thing. And I love the fact that you're like, well, let's just change the city. Like, let's just do it. And for you, that isn't a huge influence or popularity. That's just walk around and get praying.
Yeah, because I really believe that the peacemakers, that, you know, when the Bible talks about the man of peace in a city that can bring you in. And I really feel like those connections are divine connections. They're not me pounding the streets and working really hard to find X, Y, and Z. None of us can work hard enough to create the connections required for kingdom advance.
Yeah,
that is a favor thing. And I think sometimes we can spend so much time and energy trying to do something in our strength with the best of intentions, where God is inviting us, come and actually focus your time and energy on something that's much more hidden, and then allow me to bring all of those connections in a much quicker, easier, and ultimately much more blessed way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm thankful I've been forced into that in this season. Who knows if we've been able to be busy and meet X, Y, and Z, you know, who knows what we would have chosen. But actually in this season, God has created an opportunity for us to invest in sowing in prayer and intercession all over. And we're feeling the sense of the Spirit on that. And I should say none of this is formulaic, right?
Come on.
We're invited to do things. This is working. Obviously, prayer works in every circumstance. But this kind of thing that I'm describing, this isn't a formula that you can apply anywhere and it's going to work, because things need to be done in faith for them to be fruitful. So this is actually something that we feel like God is inviting us into as a community. And we're just enjoying partnering with that.
Amen.
We were given a great prophetic word just before we moved, where my uncle, actually, which was so amazing, I love my family, he sent us a message talking about how in the season of famine, Isaac didn't go to Egypt, which is exactly what his dad had done in the season of famine. So that would be his learnt response in famine. Go to Egypt. Egypt will take care of us. We'll come back. But rather, in the season of famine for Isaac, God says to him, don't go to Egypt, stay in this land and I'm going to bless you. And Isaac does the most stupid thing in the season of famine. He sows seed. No one sows seed in the season of famine. The famine will destroy the seed before you can ever see anything. But what happens? He sows the seed and he reaps a hundredfold. And the promise to us that my uncle was speaking of was, you've come in corona famine season, where everyone would say, don't plant a church in this season. The learnt behavior, the response, the logical thing to do is to divert for a moment moment and then come back in a season of plenty.
Yes.
But actually, God's promise is sow in the season of famine, and what you sow won't be robbed, but will reap a hundredfold. And so we're really, we're walking with that promise. And I just love how God does things. So I'm happy to take that verse, because I think it's an awesome verse.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's beautiful stuff. I love that. And I think, if I'm honest, I think that's got how God works, right?
Totally.
Like, why would God send someone as gifted and talented as you and Julian and send them to a flourishing place? Why would, if I was God, I'd be like, they're some of my best warriors. Let's send them to the famine, you know?
Liam, you're very kind.
You know what I mean? That's what I think in my head, because I think we often think, oh, you know, let's go where it's going to be easy. But God's called us to darkness, right?
Yes,
and,
he has.
And I think too often, Christian world, we're too busy trying to shine our light brighter than the other lights, when we should just be going to the darkness. And that's where God actually wants to produce fruit. So I'd even argue that God only bears fruit in the famine. Do you know what I mean? Because that's where he just demonstrates his how he is. And actually, Emily and I had the same kind of analogy. You know, we were given a desert that as we walked, you know, life would grow out from the desert and grass would come through. And so I was like, yeah, that sounds like Jesus to me.
Totally. Because if it can be shown to be not God and fruitful, God's not interested in it.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's like, so what's the point? Yeah.
Come on, Max.
And I think too often, and I'm saying, you know, everything I'm saying it to remind myself, this isn't about, oh, other Christians haven't got this. This is, we've got to remind ourselves, too often the human heart is drawn to what I know works. And so we're like, oh, this worked last time, even.
Yes.
And an act of faith that worked last time, if it's applied today as a formula, cannot bear fruit, because God isn't interested in us finding things that are logically going to be fruitful, because he is outside of that equation.
Yes.
He is interested in us finding impossibilities and then saying, okay, God, what are you going to do with this space? Because then he's glorified. And so with all of the Christian projects that we get on with, whether they're in places that are supposedly easy or supposedly difficult, regardless of the context, if what we're doing makes too much sense and you could take God out of the equation and it would still work, my argument is it's not God. Well, and there's a problem with that. We've got to find things as Christians in easy or difficult contexts that will fail unless God steps in. That's when we know we're living lives of faith. Outside of that, you don't need faith. You just need logic.
Well, I was going to say, is it even faith if you know it's going to work?
Exactly. Exactly.
If you're like, well, it worked for me back then, so I know it's going to work now. That's not faith anymore, because you're just relying on what your own strength and your own knowledge.
Absolutely.
Which is always weird to me.
Totally. And if a non-Christian could follow your 10-step plan and have the same results, there's a problem. And I think lots of the projects that we launch, if you could write it down on a paper and get a non-Christian to do it, it would do exactly the same thing. For me, there's a fight there inside of me, because I'm like, that isn't following the journey of faith. A non-Christian should not be able to get the same results following the same strategy.
Yes, mate, honestly, you're speaking truth now. Because, I mean, I've been to events and I've heard Christians speak. And at the end of it, like, I've been with a non-believer and they'll say to me, oh, yeah, that's really good. And, like, what they've missed is that they think they can do that.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, we preach as though, like, if you follow these 1, 2, 3 points, you'll find happiness, you'll find da-da-da-da, you'll find this. And I'm like, if you don't have God, none of that works.
Totally.
Like, totally. And I think you're on to something massive here. It's like, you've got to have faith. You've got to have dreams. You've got to have goals that are beyond your capacity. And what I say to church is, I don't just want hard goals. I want impossible goals.
Yeah. Come on. Absolutely.
I don't want it to be just like, oh, if we stretch ourselves, if we get enough money, if we get everyone on board, then we'll be able to do it. No. It's got to be, even if we got everyone on board and enough money, we still wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah.
That's got to be where faith steps in, right? That's where faith kicks in.
Yeah. And look, we've got to be honest on this. This kind of life is a difficult one. You're going to get the glorious high of it for sure, because it's also the moments of breakthrough. No amount of human strategizing can touch what that feels like.
Yes.
But also, it's a really difficult journey to walk. And there's a reason why as Christians we try to avoid that, because it's not fun praying for blind people to see lots and lots and not seeing healings. That, that doesn't make you feel great. You don't walk away from that thinking, well, that was awesome, right? So it's not fun putting all of your finances into a kingdom project that you're thinking, oh God, please don't let everything go pear-shaped. Now, if it goes pear-shaped, you're stuck in a place, but actually God is so faithful. I have to say, in the area of finances, whenever I've had crazy, crazy journeys, if not immediately, in the long run, God has shown incredible favor and kindness. But it's not an easy journey because it's terrifying. It's there's so many moments where I'm like, being a Christian is basically an act of holding your nerve for as long as you can. That's what it feels like most of the time to me. And I think so many people are like, if it doesn't feel easy, then I must be getting it wrong. And I'm like, I don't think you and I are walking out the same faith, because most of the decisions I make don't feel easy. In fact, there's often I'm having conversations with Jesus about, couldn't you have asked me to do something easier? And He just doesn't operate that way, because if we operate in the easy, we don't get to see the impossible. So it depends what we want, right? It really depends what you're after. God loves us the same no matter which option we choose. God is backing us the same no matter which option we choose. So this isn't a question of whether God loves us or approves of what we're doing or is disappointed. None of that. But really, it's a question of what kind of result do you want to see in your life? You can go with the logical and with the easy, and you will be blessed and you are loved and you're going to heaven, no problem. Or you can pursue the impossible and see unbelievable things happen. But there's a journey in that that's going to be much, much more challenging, though I would argue also much more fun. But you can't have adventure and logic. They don't go hand in hand. You have one or the other.
Or comfort. You can't have adventure.
Yeah, exactly. It just doesn't, it doesn't work. So it's an interesting walking with Jesus.
Mate, that's some great stuff you shared there. The line that stands out to me, if you operate in the easy, you won't see the impossible. Come on, man. I mean, you're right though. If you don't pray for the sick, you won't see them get healed. If you don't pray for the dead, they won't come back to life. But to go into a hospital and say, I want to pray for dead people is a tricky moment. And you have to face ridicule. And you know, the things that you've done, written your book that you've written, Planting in Boston, you've had people turn against you and sort of say, why did you do that? You shouldn't have done that. So yeah, I mean, I think it's, thanks for modeling that life as well. That's interesting.
Oh, thanks, Liam.
That's good. I want to ask you, okay, coming out of Corona season or pandemic season or whatever, or if we have a second wave after that, whatever's going on in the world these days, I don't even know. What do you hope church leaves behind? Or if you have it on the top of your head, what do you hope church carries forward or starts to do? I'll let you go with either one of those.
Let's talk about, well, I'll do a mix probably, but carrying forward, I hope we carry forward a depth of compassion that we haven't walked in before.
Talk about that.
I think, you know, this, I think this must break the heart of God, but Christians aren't always known for their compassion. And that's mind-boggling when you look at scripture, when you look at who Jesus was, where you look at the mandate on our lives. Christians are often seen as harsh and unfeeling and uncaring, and interested in their religious endeavors, but the plight of humanity is often something that is left behind. But I think something that Corona has done is level the playing field in some ways. Like, there are pockets of humanity that are in much, much harder situations than Corona will ever leave most of our countries in, right? So we've got to have that level of perspective on this. But I think what it's done is it's touched most lives with a level of uncertainty, a level of fear, all of those things that lots of people have managed to avoid. And in doing that, it's created this playing field where most people are vulnerable and in need of compassion, Christians included. And I think the invitation of that, we will have missed something if we come out of this season and go back into ordinary religious activity that is primarily orientated around the religious activity, rather than open-handed compassion to our communities. Now, some churches get this great, so it's, you know, this isn't blanket, but you know, if we did a poll amongst non-Christians worldwide about whether they primarily think Christians are compassionate or whether some other more humanitarian aid organizations are more compassionate, I'd be fascinated to hear the response of such a poll.
Wow.
Because I think, especially, you know, being in the States now, I'm so aware that Christians are seen with a religious veneer that is more Pharisaical than it is Jesus sitting with the broken. And so I think that's one of the things that I'm really praying going forward, is that Christians become clothed with compassion and helping the broken in a way that maybe we've not all been great at in the last season.
Wow.
I think there is an invitation to Christians in this season. I feel this as a provocation in the spirit, really, to be uncompromisingly hopeful. Now, that doesn't mean presumptuous. That doesn't mean I'm not going to wear a mask because Jesus is with me and he keeps me safe. You know, all of that stuff. That, again, that's about offensive manner without necessarily the substance of faith in it, right? But I feel like there is an invitation to come in an opposite spirit of what is happening in the world, which is this sense of doom and gloom, and it's all over. And I'm hearing a lot of Christians speak about Corona like it is a different category to anything else, in terms of as if God is not going to use it for good. And I'm like, last time I checked, all things means all things. Corona is included in all things. I'm not belittling the suffering. I'm not belittling the pain of what is going on. I'm not belittling that. But I'm just saying, either he's a liar or he meant all things would be used for the good of those who love him. Like, we can't have both. We can't say, actually, this is outside of that remit, but he's still good. No, it's very simple. It's black and white. He's either lying, in which case we really shouldn't trust God at all, and we can all give up now. Or he genuinely meant all things were used for the good of the believer, including this season. And I'm growing tired of hearing Christians speak with such hopelessness about this, as if this is outside of the things that God can use for good. Even a global pandemic, I've got to believe this uncompromisingly, if not the Bible is not truthful. Even a global pandemic he can use for the good of humanity. I don't understand how. I don't understand the ins and outs of that, but I don't need to understand it, because there's a place of trust that overrides the place of my understanding. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, or lean on your own understanding. You don't get to have both of those things. Because often the place of trust is totally at odds with the place of understanding. So I find that we're at a crossroads as the global church, where we have an invitation to look this in the face, not to be in denial, not to be in presumption, not to say horrific religious sounding things that alienate people, like God will protect me, sorry for you, he won't protect you, none of that. But we're at a crossroads where we get to look at the depth of the problem of a pandemic or whatever challenge we're facing and say, he promised this, so I'm going to make sure that my outlook is in line with his promise. He promised he would use all things for the good of those who love him. I'm going to make sure, intentionally pursue an outlook that follows in line with that promise. I really hope in this moment we learn that and we take it forward, so that Christians become genuinely the most hope-filled people on the planet, because that's what we're made to be. And I'm not sure that we've always walked with that. What I hope we leave behind in this season.
Before we go there, because there's a lot in there, mate. And I think you're touching on something really important. I think you're right. I would love to see Christianity at the top of the people that express the most compassion.
Yes.
I've never thought about it comparing it with other charitable aids. that's a really interesting perspective, and I think you're right, and I would love to see us become, yeah, that kind of voice in the world. Yeah, no, there's some really interesting stuff. Have you seen, just quickly, have you seen a church or a people or a pastor or somebody demonstrating that in this season that you could give an example of?
Demonstrating that in this season or just generally?
Yeah, demonstrating the compassion, like, that you want to see, like, very practically, what would it look like?
Okay, so I won't speak to Corona because I think that's, I'll find that harder to pinpoint, but I will speak to the riots here because I think clear example that I can give. Right. Yeah. So one of the churches that I've seen really speak in with compassion is called Expression 58 in LA. It's led by good friends of mine, Jen and Hona Toledo, absolutely phenomenal church. And they are speaking godly wisdom and compassion into an area of deep brokenness in the States. And I love what they put out always really practically. They've joined in, they've even in terms of protests, in terms of partnering with their city and having a heart that cares about what their city cares about, which I think is really important.
Yes.
And in terms of practicality, really being there on the ground, which is amazing, but also in terms of their language. Okay. If you go on to Expression 58, you listen to Jen Toledo's messages, the language is so intentionally chosen. It's not this sickly religious veneer that lives on a different plane to everybody else and therefore isn't able to connect with what humanity is experiencing, but it's raw and it's real and it is laced with compassion. She is fiery, she is strong. I think sometimes we use compassion and people think weak or kind of like namby-pamby. It's none of that. This is a fiery compassion that wants to meet the need of people's brokenness, and it's beautiful. I think for me, they really are standout in how they're responding to the needs of their community in the challenges that they're facing right now.
Wow. I love the fact that the practical example you give is people that are using their language. I think that's really interesting. I think we often think compassion, we think clothing the naked, giving food to the home, you know, all those kind of things. But actually the way you speak and the language you bring is actually very compassionate. And that's very applicable for everyone listening, because the way you use your profile, the way you use your Instagram and Facebook, use it with compassion. And Katia, man, that is so needed right now, because the amount of blame shifting, falling out, you know, why aren't my neighbors not part, you know, why are they not wearing masks, or just so much hate towards politicians and leaders. And I'm like, guys, let's only post compassion and hope. I think you're right on something there.
Totally. It's an interesting dynamic at the moment. Social media is somewhere where people just vomit up every thought and emotion, and rarely use filters. And I find that fascinating. A study on our generation is just fascinating right now.
Yeah.
But I do think that Christians are being seen through the lens of social media, and it is not a flattering lens. Mm. And we have got to understand that we bring the kingdom through our social media feed.
We represent it.
Totally. Yeah. Not because we're using religious language. I think so many people are like, right, so I need to preach the gospel. No, actually, sometimes you don't need to say anything that sounds Christianese. But you need this, we are being invited on social media. I believe it's a tool that God would love us to use if we're willing to show that Christians are deeply concerned with the fears of people's hearts, that we're deeply concerned with the challenges that people are facing, that we're not interested in using language that makes us feel superior or holier than thou, or belonging to a club that has its own jargon that no one understands, so it makes us feel special. You know, all of that language, the intentionality of how we use our words on social media, can either make people feel like they're just not good enough, or can make them feel like there is a space for them to belong. And honestly, as we allow people to belong, belief isn't far behind.
Yeah.
And so I'm really passionate about social media, our feed. If I'm not sure what to say, I don't say anything
yes.
at all. And
right.
I really think
Perfect.
That's a good way forward.
Yes. I wish everyone would copy that. Yes.
Certainly. If you're not sure, yes. just keep silent.
Yes. You don't have to share your opinion. It's fine. And I try to teach
really
our
don't.
Church about, you know, the word glory a lot in the Bible can actually mean God's opinion. And so when Jesus says, I want to give them my glory, it can mean I want to give them my opinion. I've been trying to teach the church, like, I think we're meant to drop our opinions. I don't think you're supposed to have one. I think you're supposed to represent God's opinion to the world. And that's where I'm trying to get to.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? Please, Jesus,
yeah, I mean,
help
it'd be
us.
Nice if it happened to me first. Like, I need to get
I know. Jesus, help us.
Yeah, help me. Okay, let's maybe go for one last question, because
okay.
I want to talk about what it is that you wanted to leave behind. So what do you hope the church leaves behind after COVID going forward?
I mean, I think we're touching on these in the negative. I really hope we leave behind fear
okay.
and this propensity to live in that place. I really hope that we live behind. The church always has an interesting relationship with judgment, and we've touched
okay.
on this, that we should be a judgment-free zone. It's it's not something that we're best known for, being a judgment-free zone, but we really should be, because judgment isn't our prerogative. And, you know, we're warned again and again, beware of what you judge. You will fall into
yeah,
exactly the
yeah.
same thing that you
yeah.
judge. Like, I mean, should we ever have listened to a warning? That's a big one to listen to. And yet I think the church is well known for judgment. And if there's ever a time for that to have been brought to the surface, COVID has, as you touched on, is one of those moments that is bringing it all out, and where there's just so much negativity,
yeah,
anger and division.
Yeah.
Sure. And so I'm really praying that we see ourselves clearly enough in the mirror of this moment that we suddenly see the plank in our eye and we suddenly go, oh my gosh, that's what I look like. And sometimes it takes something that takes you right to the brink for you to realize that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, Corona is one moment where we're seeing, hearing and seeing so much. It's like we're saturated. We're almost to the point of like, we can't get much more.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that moment rebounds onto the body and we suddenly realize what we sound like. We suddenly see our feeds for what they look like. We suddenly hear our voices and think, that's not what I was made for.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really praying that this is a season that shapes that out of us, that we become a body that is, that doesn't think our mandate is judgment. That's so far from the message that we're called to bring, isn't it? And so that's what I'm really praying for.
That's interesting. So we develop a self-awareness, leave behind the judgment. I mean, the judgment is a funny one. How do you balance then, you know, because I think the reaction to that comment would be sort of like, yeah, but the world needs to learn to hear the truth. They need to be told what's right. You know, we need to, and the world's going so crazy with definitely some issues. It's going mad. You know, we need to redirect them. What would you respond to that kind of pushback?
Yeah. You know, I think the best parenting techniques, I've got two toddlers at the moment.
Go for it.
God bless us with two toddlers. It's loads of fun in the midst of a pandemic. I'm realizing that the best parenting techniques is to firstly model what I'm expecting from them in my own life.
Come on.
You know, me listing the things of right and wrong rarely work.
Yeah, sticking on the fridge isn't going to help. Yeah.
No, and the funny thing is they know the right and the wrong often.
Mm.
So that's not, you know, my lectures aren't informing them of anything. They're just making their hearts slightly harder to access.
Wow.
And particularly if I'm lecturing them on something that I'm not very good at. Yeah, in this family, we don't shout as you're shouting. You know, that whole thing doesn't work because all they're hearing is you shouting. And my kids will totally say to me, "Mommy, you broke the rule right now. You were shouting," which is great. I'm like, "Yeah, I've got to say sorry.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I'm so sorry." But
yeah,
but the point is that what I model is much more powerful than what I lecture on. And when I think my lectures are informative, they're nowhere near as informative as I assumed. I really believe as Christians, we are called to carry a completely different atmosphere that ignites hunger in people's hearts. Often what we are interested in is bringing concept of morality to a world that is dead, and we wonder why it doesn't work. You are asking the dead to live with your morality. The morality isn't the issue, it's whether they're alive that's the issue. You will never bring them alive by your lecturing. We will bring them alive by carrying fresh bread that ignites hunger in their hearts. They will eat of that
water,
bread.
Yeah.
And they will come alive. And so I'm
Brilliant.
Not saying that morality doesn't matter, that there isn't right and wrong. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying I don't think we're productive
Wow.
when we speak right and wrong as a lecture and as a judgment. We do nothing. But when we live lives that are radically different, where we bring truth, where we, you know, Psalm says his kindness leads us to our knees,
Yeah.
right? So I don't need to talk about all the things you've done wrong that you should feel ashamed of. Rather, I can introduce them to the atmosphere of heaven and to a Father who is kinder than they ever dared believe. And that leads them to life and to repentance more than my lecturing ever will.
Mate, that is some absolute gold. I think that is to actually see it rather than us trying to instruct the world how to be moral. You've got to try and resurrect them. You've got to try and bring them back to life. And let's be honest with, you know, with our lives, I didn't start behaving the right way because I was told to. I started behaving the right way because I felt a burden in my heart for the Lord and what he asked of me. It came out of relationship that I acted a certain way. And you're right, man. When you then start judging other people who don't have that relationship. And plus, how do we expect them to change if they don't have the Holy Spirit?
Totally. It's an impossibility.
I couldn't do it. So how am I expecting them to start thinking the same way as me? So maybe
exactly.
You are. That's.
And, you know, I'll just say one more thing on this. I know
Go.
We're almost out of time. But, you know, so psychologists, this is like secular psychologists,
Yeah.
Are discovering increasingly that behavior is not rooted in desire, but it's rooted in an understanding of identity. Now,
Okay.
if we understand that in a gospel context,
mm-hmm.
for non-Christians, they cannot be expected to live according to the morality of the kingdom because their identity, they don't have that identity.
Yes.
So their behavior will consistently flow out of the identity of belonging to the kingdom of darkness. That's just a reality of their belief system. For Christians, if we want to change how we behave, it's not through heaping on judgment on ourselves and, you know, gathering accountability groups that will
yeah.
make us feel ashamed enough to. I've been part of them. In fact, I've
yeah.
led groups like that. They don't work.
Mm-hmm.
All they do is modify behavior without freeing the heart.
Mm-hmm.
But if we go after identity, if we pursue an understanding of what it means to be sons and daughters of God,
yes.
then what we find is that behavior falls in place with that belief system, and we don't need to form accountability groups around our sin anymore because the sin issues aren't issues anymore because our identity is governing how we live and the decisions we make, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would, I'm arguing for not shouting judgment in the face of those whose identity hasn't been transformed yet.
Mm.
Transform that identity. Then we can talk about what that identity means for our behavior. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And so just to bring that down a level, because that was very smart. You're kind of saying if your identity is that you're a prince, you will act princely. If your identity
exactly.
is that you're garbage, you'll act like
yeah,
garbage, which
absolutely.
Is completely all over psychology. You're totally
yeah,
right.
Totally. And which is why we've got to be careful as Christians to not to not say things like, oh, I'm just a dirty little sinner.
Come on.
Oh, you know,
come on.
Or sing songs that are theologically incorrect about how I'm just a sinner, but I was a sinner. 100% I was a sinner, but I'm not a sinner anymore. And if I speak that over myself, all I do is partner with an old identity.
Yes.
And that means that my behavior, you know, I'm garbage, I'm garbage, I'm garbage. My behavior can't help but flow from that.
Yeah.
But I'm consistently agreeing with what God says about me, then my behavior comes in line with that. You know, if you think you're a queen, you make decisions with your finances like a queen.
You walk like a queen.
You associate in a way that makes sense as a queen. You speak to people with the language of a queen, right? So it's all about how you understand yourself to be. We've got to understand ourselves in line with what scripture tells about us. We cannot afford to disagree with what God says about us. Life is too short for that.
Wow. And then as you do that with you, as you said at the start, you then become an example. And you're right, man. You sit there with a true, solid identity in who you are, and you go and sit around unbelievers. They will either be annoyed by you or they'll be drawn to you. And I see that a lot. You know, people suddenly start acting funny around me and they don't want to see me again. And then some are like completely drawn to you because they're like, why are you so comfortable and secure? And
yes.
I think you're right. You model it.
You ignite hunger in people.
Yeah, this has been some fantastic stuff. I think we've got about 2 minutes left. Okay. So, Katia, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks,
do you want
for
to
having me,
else?
Liam.
Shout out to any of your friends that you've seen.
Yes, I saw Jeshua on here a while ago, and I think the Knot Cuts too, which was really awesome.
Great.
It's been such a joy being here. Thanks, Liam, for having me. It's been fun.
No worries, man. We'll have to get you guys back on soon and definitely get you over to Flow at some point.
We would love that.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Katia. I really appreciate you. Everyone say goodbye to her. We love you and Julian a lot, so thank you so much.
Thanks, Liam. Thanks. Have a great rest of your day, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to this bonus episode of Frequency Conversations. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you're looking for more from Liam, you can find his info on his Instagram account at Parker Liam or through his church's Instagram, Flow Church UK. And as always, you can find more resources from us on YouTube, on Instagram, or on our website at frequentsee.org.